Andy Jacobson is the best-selling author of the books Area 51 and Operation Paperclip, now drawing on years of research, exclusive interviews, and private documents. Jacobs has written a history of the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, the world's most powerful and productive military science agency, and the government's most controversial secret weapon. The name of the book is The Pentagon's Brain, an uncensored history of DARPA, America's top secret military research agency. The book is published by Little Brown. Andy Jacobson, a great pleasure to have you back on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Very nice to have you. What brought you to look at this brain of the Pentagon and to go in depth and discover DARPA?
When I was writing my previous book, Operation Paperclip, about the Nazi scientists who came to America after the war, and I was doing follow-up work on Von Braun, wondering what happened to him, you know, in the late 50s, lo and behold, I learned that Von Braun was chosen to be the first director of this powerful, secretive new agency inside the Pentagon called DARPA. And it didn't work out for Von Braun because he insisted that he be able to bring 14 of his Nazi colleagues to the Pentagon with him if he was going to be the chief scientist, and that did not fly in Washington. They could handle one, but not more than a dozen. And so another scientist named Herb York became the first director of DARPA, but that was enough to spark my interest. Then when I looked into the agency and I learned how unreported it has been in history, I knew I really wanted to report this story. And boy, was I shocked, surprised, amazed, and sometimes terrified with what I learned.
One of the things that I got out of reading the book is that how many failures there have been over this half century.
Yes, I mean, DARPA is about brilliance and hubris. It's about amazing technological feats, and it's also about, you know, really dangerous failures. And that goes hand in hand with, you know, vying for pole position, the determination to be at the top of the game, which is what DARPA is so excellent at. But, you know, of course, failure comes. And because it's so unreported, we don't know about that. I think it's important that people do know about that as well as the great stuff.
Talk a little bit. I mean, you went back to the early days, but talk to us about its inception during the Cold War and why that was so important and what ultimately they were looking to do with this agency.
Well, I begin the book with the story of a nuclear bomb test in 1954, which is 4 years before DARPA began. And it's the first deliverable thermonuclear weapon. So it's a hydrogen bomb, so much more powerful than the atomic bomb. And there had been a big debate at even building this bomb, engineering this weapon, because many of the scientists on the program called it an evil thing. That's an exact quote. But it was built anyways. And I begin with this moment where it's about to go off. And I thought that was very interesting in the big scope of weapons, because the fact that science could proceed despite scientists saying it shouldn't proceed, and then those same scientists would proceed anyways, that's really something to wrap your head around. And that's what DARPA is all about, because, you know, we make these weapons that are so powerful, so terrible, and in essence cannot be defended against, and then we have to create ways to defend against them.
When
DARPA was set up to do.
When you got into this, did you realize how broad a spectrum this agency covered? In the sense that they're not only working on weapons, but they're working on neurobiology. They're working on control and manipulation of chemicals and in the human brain. I mean, there's a lot more here than just what we would think of as conventional weaponry.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I did know going into it that DARPA started with a big vision, and then I also knew, based on just kind of a cursory look at what little was known about what DARPA is doing presently, that they had, you know, grown exponentially and sort of transmorphed into all these other areas. technologies, by the way, which DARPA created. I mean, you mentioned, you know, biology, that whole business of biotechnology in many ways is the result of DARPA efforts after the Berlin Wall went down and we learned so much about what the Soviets were doing with biological weapons. Suddenly there were biologists at the Pentagon. So you're absolutely right. I mean, DARPA has many heads. It's kind of like a hydra in that regard, that it's everywhere. It has to have unconventional weapons, conventional weapons. It has to be 25 years ahead of the game. And it also has to be able to, you know, defend against the current threat, whatever that may be.
We're talking with Annie Jacobson about the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, otherwise known as DARPA. Her new book is The Pentagon's Brain, An Uncensored History of DARPA. The book is published by Little Brown. Why has artificial intelligence been so important for DARPA and them wanting to create full autonomy within the weapon systems that we use?
Well, artificial intelligence, the quest for that, because of course it has not been, you know, that barrier has not been broken yet.
Right.
That has been something that DARPA has led in since its creation. What has happened is that DARPA has also led in these other technologies that have allowed the movement toward all of artificial intelligence to become more and more of a reality, specifically information technology. So one of the known projects that DARPA is so famous for is the Internet, which began as the ARPANET. But once you had this kind of computer technology developing into an entire industry, then you have, you know, that idea of Moore's Law, things getting more powerful and half the size at this incredible rate. That is all pushing us toward artificial intelligence. What I found in my research that was just at the edge of terrifying was this newest push toward artificial intelligence, which has to do with coupling man and animal. And when I say that, I mean, you know, in the old days, in the 80s, we started hearing these science fictional ideas about cyborgs. And DARPA is actually doing this now as science fact. In other words, they've been able to remotely control a rat by implanting electrodes in its brain. That was something they were actually able to do back in around 2001. And now, starting in 2014, they've been able to do that with the first flying insect, a moth, to implant electrodes in the pupa stage, the larva stage of that moth. Then as it metamorphosizes into a moth, suddenly the electrodes sort of become part of its body and the DARPA scientists are able to steer it. So this spooky idea of cyborgs is now moving toward humans. And again, this is Pentagon dogma. This is not science fiction. This is DARPA documentation that I write about in the book. And that's leading us toward this idea where one day, soon, DARPA hopes, man, the super soldier, the warfighter, call it what you will, this idea that man will have implants inside of him to make him almost limitless in terms of physiology and in terms of what the Pentagon calls cognitive functioning, but really is brain control.
You refer to it as BCI, brain-computer interfaces. So you also talk about the Pentagon's plans that go into 2038, which involve the creation and deployment of these swarms of hunter-killer drones. These are machines that can swim and crawl and walk and run and fly at incredible speeds, like 13,000 miles per hour. So do those two go together in some way?
Well, they do, and they go together in what the Pentagon calls human-robot interaction. That's an actual plan of action at the Pentagon. It's to make humans comfortable with this movement toward autonomous robots, hunter-killer robots. And in that document that you refer to that I write about in the book, it's a 25-year plan to move from where we are now. Drones are, you know, controlled by an operator. And then there's the next step, which is that there will be an interplay. Then we move toward semi-autonomy, and then ultimately toward full autonomy, or what the Pentagon calls self-governance, where you can, and this is sort of the poor man's version, but it gets the point across. Autonomy, self-governance would be where you could hold a photograph up to a drone and say, go kill this person. And then they would kill the individual, you know, find them through intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, and come back and report in. And that idea has a lot of people at the Pentagon concerned, and I also write about that, this idea of robot ethics. So it's the Pentagon, one part of the Pentagon wants to move in that direction, and certainly DARPA, but many of the commanding officers and drone operators think that moving toward hunter-killer robots is a very bad idea.
Annie Jacobson is the author of the new book, The Pentagon's Brain, that is published by Little Brown. When it comes to that division, if you will, of the future, it brings up the question that you write about and that I'm fascinated with as to who ultimately is in charge. Because when you talk about plans going into 2038, obviously this is going to go through several presidential administrations. It's going to go through several leaders. So how much of the plans that are made now actually last that long?
Well, that's a great question, and that's a super important question. And here's what I found to be the so-called rub that was very disturbing. I think the decision makers, in a way, used to come from this group called the Jason Scientists, and I interview several of them for the book, including the co-founder of the Jasons, who just died at the age of 90, Merv Goldberger. And the Jasons were what were called the supermen of science. They were seen as these nuclear physicists, and they would advise DARPA and the Pentagon on what programs were good ideas. But there's been a movement away from scientists like the Jason Scientists toward a group at the Pentagon called the Defense Science Board. And that group is really now the top heavy decision makers, the individuals that you say are making these important decisions, looking ahead 25 years, and who will most likely continue to stay there as presidents change. And these scientists are, for the most part, defense contractors. They come from a background of being in the business of making weapons. And that's where you get a very important problem, in my eyes. And I think, to quote President Eisenhower, it's the problem of the military-industrial complex. If the people advising the government on what weapon systems to make are the same people who are making and profiting from those weapon systems, then there must really be a question of how democratic is that.
You write about this in the book. President Obama, in May of 2013, gives a speech and says all wars must end. One of the points of the speech is that the Pentagon would be curtailing the use of drones. As you point out in the book, the opposite is happening. Is that a lie? Or is that an administration that is, or any administration that is not fully aware of what is going on within DARPA and happening behind the walls of the Pentagon?
I think it's a little bit of whistling by the graveyard. You know, you can say all wars must end in a hopeful way, and you can say, drones, you can suggest that drones are going to be curtailed. But my reading of that speech is actually that that's not what President Obama said at all. He simply said that there was going to be more oversight, and it was the press who interpreted that speech as that drones were going away. But it's just so far, so I do not believe that he misspoke, in essence. He was misquoted. He reads those documents, he of course he does, and the Secretary of Defense signs off on them. And everybody at the Pentagon knows that the way of the future as it stands right now is moving toward hunter-killer drones. And as you said, swarms of them, not just the Predator, but drones that are the size of insects, slow-moving drones that crawl, that swim, you know, as high up as they can launch satellites down to the depths of the ocean. And this is the way of warfare if DARPA has its say, which DARPA almost always does.
In speaking a few moments ago, you talked about the Jason scientists who believe that this chip in the brain program is treading on dangerous ground. What I heard from you, and in reading the book, I got the sense as well, is that there's a shift in power, that those scientists become more powerful and then less powerful. Is that the case, that these Jason scientists either are somewhat in the minority now, but that could change?
Well, it's a troubling shift because the Jasons have been advising the Pentagon and had been working specifically for DARPA back when it was called ARPA from almost the moment ARPA opened its doors all the way through the Vietnam War exclusively. The Jason scientists had been making, you know, very critical decisions along, you know, at the request of the Secretary of Defense. And you're absolutely right that they are being moved out of the way. And my understanding from DARPA program managers is this was just something that began during the War on Terror, that's where the Jason scientists started to become, in the words of one program manager, irrelevant as the Defense Science Board took more and more power. And again, that important distinction, the Jason scientists, the supermen of scientists, were in fact full-time academics. And they were only defense scientists in the summer when they would gather and work on these hard problems. And the scientists the Pentagon is using now are full-time defense contractors.
Annie Jacobson is our guest. The book is The Pentagon's Brain, An Uncensored History of DARPA, America's Top Secret Military Research Agency. The book has so many different stories about so many different projects, but let me get to one, which is IBM had the supercomputer Roadrunner, and this once contained the nation's nuclear codes. It is now obsolete. It is being destroyed, but they're taking remnants from it, and I believe this is happening in Los Alamos, correct?
Yes.
In Los Alamos, in the National Laboratory there, and DARPA scientists are looking to build an artificial brain.
Yes, I went to that laboratory, and it was amazing to go and see that. And there were two things that were really interesting to me. One was that the Roadrunner IBM supercomputer in 2008 was the fastest computer in the world. I mean, it was just astonishing in terms of speed. And now it is obsolete, and actually China leads with the world's fastest supercomputer. And so Los Alamos is destroying this computer because it has the nuclear codes on it, and so it can't be recycled. But one part of it is being utilized to run these programs while DARPA works on building something called synthetic intelligence or cognitive intelligence, and that is the idea that this one team would try and recreate the neural network of the primate to see if they can essentially break that barrier to artificial intelligence. And so it's kind of interesting that the computer that is powering this is actually the computer that can't be recycled because it has the nuclear codes on it.
There are so many different programs. I mean, there's the program we talked about of the robotic swarms of hunter-killer drones, and of course the program you just spoke about the artificial brain, limb regeneration scientists and technologies working. There are so many programs that you talk about in the book. How aware are the individual projects on one another? Meaning, are they all working sort of for a common goal? And is there an awareness and someone that's sort of overseeing the whole thing? Or are they very much kind of farmed out doing their old thing and the right hand doesn't often know what the left hand is doing?
I think that there's an element of both. I think that DARPA, because it maintains this very small staff, it has only 120 program managers at any given time, And those program managers themselves are generally scientists and engineers at the top of their game. They generally stay at DARPA for about 5 years. They handle enormous budgets. They hire work from academic laboratories, military laboratories, private industry. DARPA's $3 billion budget is, in essence, spread out among those 120 program managers. But those people come and go. But, of course, DARPA's infrastructure knows the big picture. And so to that question, is it all going somewhere? Let me give you one example I find super interesting, which is, again, this idea of going toward human-robot interaction. And one of those programs that's really being looked at right now is augmented cognition. And a lot of people see this as, you know, a great idea, making people smarter. And this idea of transhumanism does not bother some people. They see transhumanism, man merging with machine, as a natural next step in evolution. So here are two little programs that are super interesting to me. One is for imagery analysts. So CIA analysts, NSA analysts, looking at, you know, photographs of targets. And you may have seen them in books or on TV. And, you know, they're super, it's like, where is the underground bunker entrance? And it just looks like black and trees from however many thousand feet up. Well, the imagery analysts are so talented at being able to, you know, pinpoint how to read a satellite image. They're now being given caps, EEG caps by DARPA that they put on their head, and it kind of like stimulates certain areas of their brain to make them work faster, to be able to detect targets better. And so it's kind of this spooky idea of, is this a good idea? And the same EEG cap is being used at what some of us call trigger pullers, the guys in the field who are shooting.
Right.
And wearing these EEG caps, they're able to shoot with more accuracy. But ultimately, in many of the documents I read, both the imagery analysts and the shooters complain about this awkward cap they're wearing. You know, it's sweaty. It's cumbersome. And so then the next idea is, well, why don't we go ahead and work at a brain implant where the same, that cap is shrunk down to something that can be sitting on the brain. And again, it seems like this is all taking us toward that strange world of human cyborg robot interaction.
I realize this is a very broad question, but is money being misused?
You know, I don't know how to answer that question. I do know that colleagues of DARPA always, and also scientists who work for DARPA, almost always speak of nothing but money well spent. And I really mean that. That's like a question that I would ask everyone, and I interviewed more than 70 scientists who were uniquely affiliated with DARPA programs. So this idea that money is being wasted is not something that ever came up in my wheelhouse. In fact, you know, the CIA has recently created its own version of DARPA. It's called IARPA. And I interviewed one of the individuals who was responsible for getting IARPA off the ground. And he told me that they used DARPA as a model. And one of the ways that they were able to push this idea through Congress was because it was so financially efficient. And I think that is a good indication that one thing that DARPA does well is spend its money.
You used the word a moment ago, spooky. And so my final question to you is, what ultimately do you think, because I came out of this book very mixed, that, oh, cool, we have these things, I guess this is good. And also, wow, this scares the hell out of me. So is that mixed reaction kind of what we're left with?
I think so, because I think it is the double-edged sword. On the one hand, DARPA has done its job since 1958, which is to make sure that the United States is not overtaken by technological surprise. So there must be credit where credit is due. I mean, national security owes much to the scientists and others who work for DARPA. On the other hand, there's always the issue of where are we headed? And my takeaway, the only time where I believe I kind of inserted my own opinion into the book, because as a journalist, my job is to inform the public, but at the end, one sort of comes to a conclusion. The dangerous area for this reporter is that area we spoke of earlier, where it seems that defense contractors, those who stand to make the money, when those individuals are now in the business of making decisions of where the money will be spent and where weaponry will go in the future, that to me is a real head shaker, where you say that does not smell right.
Andy Jacobson is the author of the new book, The Pentagon's Brain, An Uncensored History of DARPA, America's Top Secret Military Research Agency. The book is published by Little Brown. Andy Jacobson, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing your insight.
Thanks so much for having me.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book is The Pentagon's Brain. It is published by Little Brown. Andy Jacobson is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.